You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Tuesday Racing Podcast from William Hill. And I've plenty of great racing to look forward to on Tuesday. We've got Brighton and Hamilton in the afternoon before Chepstow in the evening. And we're also jumping over at Stratford, all live on Racing Radio from 1:50 p.m. Please do join us then. But here on the podcast, my name is John Gibby, joined in the studio by Rory DeLaghi. Hello, Rory. How
Good
are you?
Good afternoon, John. And congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Again.
I appreciate that, yeah. Rory. I'm now tied down here 5 days a week, which will be interesting going forward. But more time to podcast and more time to get you and others' selections for the day's racing.
Well, it's a bit like marrying your longtime girlfriend, I think you'll find.
Okay, because I haven't done that yet. So,
In a manner of speaking, you'll find out whether it's for you or not.
That'll be good. That'll be a good test drive.
But of course, you don't get weekends off with that either.
No, that's true. And I didn't get weekends off before, so it's basically a life sentence. We'll get your thoughts on Tuesday's racing very shortly. We'll first start off by taking a look at the Monday jury in the Racing Post, though. Every Tuesday on the Racing Podcast, we take a look at the Monday jury as we record it on a Monday in the trade paper and ask our pundit the big questions as we come out of the weekend. And it's quite a mixed weekend, Rory. There was a lot going on, including the Irish Derby. And the first question, what did you make of Irish Derby winner the Trobe, and where do you see him ending up?
I thought he was very game. I thought it was a very likeable performance. I thought he got a good ride in the circumstances from Donoghue. I don't think the form is particularly solid for obvious reasons. It was a messy race. A few horses were compromised. Those who raced towards the front were definitely helped, but in fairness, Latrobe wasn't meant to be towards the front. The tactics on him were meant to hold him up in mid division, and then try to move into the race. And Donoghue took the decision very early in the race that they weren't going a strong enough pace, and he moved up. And fair play to him for doing that. He's a very impressive jockey, I think. I think he'd be Irish champion this season. I think he'd probably be Irish champion for a few years to come after that as well. I think he's a better rider than Joseph was. It's not to knock Joseph. He just has that little... The difference between him and Joseph, I think, is that Donoghue comes across as being a man who's absolutely full of self-confidence.
Yeah.
Whereas you listen to Joseph, he's very talented, but he's very self-effacing. He's a bit like his father in that regard. Whereas Donoghue has star quality about him. And pressure, I don't think it's going to make a difference to him. If it does, it'll be to make him better at what he does. So I thought the Irish Derby is most interesting for that, for seeing how that dynamic is changing. In terms of the form, you wouldn't go mad about it. The three-year-old crop don't look particularly strong, but Latrobe had just come into the race off the back of a maiden, so it was impressive that he was able to battle as well as he did and get the race won. For me, the obvious place that he's going to end up is Flemington.
Yeah.
You know, he's got Melbourne Cup written all over him because he's owned by Lloyd Williams. He's having a similar route to last year's Melbourne Cup winner already. The only race Lloyd Williams really wants, I mean, he'd love to win an Irish Derby, but he lives for the Melbourne Cup. So that's clearly where he's going to be going at some stage. And I would have thought, given a three-year-old won the race last year, with a similar background, that's exactly where he's going to be heading. Possibly via the St. Ledger, possibly via the Irish St. Ledger or something like that. They might take him over early and give him a prep in Australia. But that's the race that seems to be his main target now after the Irish Derby.
And could it be we'll see Joseph O'Brien winning every Melbourne Cup from now until the end of eternity with some three-year-old who's been racing in Irish maidens at the front end of the season? We'll find out. We'll move on now to talk about Saxon Warrior, who, of course, was disappointing not for the first time in a derby this season. The question here is non-stale or just not as good as he looked at Newmarket, which I guess in some ways could be the same question, really.
I think there is meant to be a difference then. in that, you know, maybe he will come back to his Newmarket form if he's dropped back to a mile and a quarter, even a mile. Mm. He was very impressive at Newmarket. I thought the most interesting comment there, everyone says the same thing, he's had two chances at a mile and a half, and it hasn't worked out for him. He looked a superstar at Newmarket. He's got to be dropped back in trip, and then we'll find out how good he is. The interesting one there, of the of people who were asked, and again, this is a slightly oblique answer to the question, I was very interested in what Kieran O'Neill said, which is completely opposite of everyone else. He said, I thought he looked slow and he needs further. And actually, if you knew nothing about Saxon Warrior coming into either the Derby or the Irish Derby, that would actually be your conclusion. He could not muster the pace to challenge. He stayed on perfectly well at the Curragh. It wouldn't have been the strongest test of stamina, but I think the key to him is that he wants an end-to-end gallop. His most impressive performances came when they've gone, like, off a shovel in both the Racing Post Trophy and the Guineas.
On straight courses.
So, the faster they go, he just wants to go as fast as he can in a straight line. And clearly a mile is the minimum trip for him. But tactical races seem to expose his weaknesses. He was badly drawn, of course, at Epsom. That's worth bearing in mind. He was well drawn at the Curragh. And, you know, he couldn't operate. I don't think, you know, you couldn't say he wasn't a stayer. But, of course, racing at those trips, stamina is often misunderstood. It's not just a case of whether you stay or not. It's about your effectiveness in the kind of race that you run in. And the kind of races we get over a mile and a quarter, mile and a half, maybe don't suit Saxon Warrior. I would say he would struggle in an International Stakes, for example, or in an Eclipse. I think the Eclipse probably comes too soon for him. What he wants is the kind of race, possibly back in a straight track, which would mean running over a mile. But just, he wants that really strong pace to aim at, and then he looks impressive. But he's never quickened up particularly sharply. He came out of the dip with some fair momentum at Newmarket, but he hasn't looked to have that kind of turn of foot in his two races since. And maybe it's because they've tried to switch him off to stay the trip that's disappeared. And I think he's able to quicken better when he's at full stretch in the first place.
You mentioned potentially dropping back down to a mile. I think if they wanted to win more Group 1s with this horse, that's potentially where I'd be looking. But if you're Coolmore, They're probably going to be quite keen to win a Group 1 with him, either over a mile 2 or a mile 4. He's a son of Deep Impact. You know, in terms of his worth as a stallion, that would be very valuable to them.
Yeah, I think it's the key is the quality of the race they win. But you want a Guineas. That's the main one. I think they've got him really, really straight for the Guineas. I thought he'd be a Derby horse and the Guineas would maybe come a little bit too soon for him, but he was tremendously straight for that, and maybe he peaked very early. I've said this in the past, that it's very, very hard for Guineas winners to hold their form through the season. If you get them really cherry ripe for Newmarket, that's often their season. Yeah. You know, you can maybe go to the Curragh for the Irish version straight after that, but often horses, they'll peak for a month or two, and then the form will gradually sort of slip away a little bit. So it's not going to be easy for him. But, you know, with Deep Impact being winner over a mile and seven, the more they really want to show his speed, I suppose. But they've only got wins up to a mile with him at this stage. I'm not sure whether they'll need to keep exploring a mile and a half now that he's come up short in the Derby. But he's not going to be the easiest to place. And, you know, the Guineas form has worked out to some degree, but it's been knocked a little bit as well. So we're in a little bit of limbo in terms of where the three-year-olds are at the moment.
We've really got to move on, but I think it's such an interesting point about the Guineas as well, because if you look at the last few seasons, you know, Saxon Warrior, Churchill, Galileo Gold, Glen Eagles, they've all faded, as you say, in the later part of the season.
Well, and if you go back 50 years and just look at the horses who've been very good, dual Guineas winners, you either get complete superstars who are miles better than anything else and can do anything, or you get these horses who are brilliant for a short period of time and then are almost second division by the end of the season.
We're on to the next question, and it still concerns both derbies, I suppose. The Epsom form did take a bit of a hit in the Irish Derby. What does that mean for Massar and Roaring Lion in Saturday's Eclipse?
Nothing is the quick answer to that. I know you were keen to move on, so let's make the point that the Derby form hasn't, you know, DXB, you could argue, let the form down. Clearly didn't run his race, and he got messed around a lot. You'd forgive him his run. Otherwise, you know, the principles from the Derby have run to sort of similar level. And the Curragh race was messy, you know, but because they went slow and the pace was steadied further at one stage of the race, it's not you don't hang your hat on the form of the Irish Derby. So let's not jump to any conclusions about the chances of horses like Massara and Roaring Lion, who didn't run there based on what happened in a completely different race.
Talking more generally about the classic generation, how do you think the three-year-olds will do when they come up against the older horses?
I think one of them will beat them out of sight, and that's Alpha Centauri. I think she's the perfect example of why there shouldn't be wait for age, because she's fully mature at the moment. I don't think she'd improve another, you know, £10 from 3 to 4. She's got the strength to carry her frame now. She was always precocious. She was very impressive first time out last year. The key to her is just getting quick ground and you know, being ready to go. When she meets her elders, she will absolutely stuff them. But having seen inconclusive races for the Derby at Epsom, for the French Classics, and for the Irish Derby, I'd say that the 3 year olds as a whole will struggle. There don't look to be too many stars in there at the moment. But of course, with every crop of 3 year olds, you never know when stars are going to emerge. You know, we wouldn't have picked either Cracksman or Enable out last year at an early stage. You know, Cracksman was going for the Blue Ribbon Trial at Epsom in the spring, which is, you know, good horses don't come out of that. And Enable had just won a maiden race before she, at the start of the season, which was aimed at the Oaks. So it sometimes takes the big races to see stars emerge, and it'd be nice if something who's been a bit slow to develop suddenly exploded onto the scene in the next few weeks.
We've already mentioned the Melbourne Cup, and does Northumberland Plate winner Withhold have what it takes to succeed down under, is how it's phrased?
In broad terms, yes. Yeah, I'm not. You can't make a decision about what his chance is in the race because you don't know what the field is going to be, if he's going to get in, where he's going to be drawn, that kind of thing. But he's got the right qualities, and Tony Bloom has been looking for a Melbourne Cup horse for a long time. That's a big dream for him. It's a dream for any British trainer to win a Melbourne Cup, of course. But it's very important for Tony Bloom because he's got a strong association with Melbourne. And you can see this has been a plan for a long time. They haven't want to mess around with him running in more than two races a year here. You know, he had a prep run and then he won the Cesarewitch last year. I'm sure he could have run before that. And then they went straight to the Northumberland Plate this year. And he qualifies by dint of winning the Cesarewitch and the Northumberland Plate. And that's a tremendously ballsy way of qualifying a horse for the Melbourne Cup. You know, normally the rules are you've got to win two heritage handicaps or you've got to win a listed race will be placed in a Group 2, Group 3, or a Group 1 would do perfectly well, obviously. Very few people will go, oh, let's win two heritage handicaps then. There only are 30-odd runners in them. But that's what they've done, and they've absolutely bolted up both times. He's qualified. He hasn't had to show his full hand. He's probably going to have to run again to be guaranteed a run, but you never know what the Australian handicapper is going to do. You know, he's got the combination of speed and stamina that you need for that. The turn of foot he's shown both at Newmarket and at Newcastle has been remarkable for a stayer. So we know he gets the chip very well. Where we've fallen down in the past with Melbourne Cup hopes is they've maybe been too stout stayers and they can get down for turn of foot. Whereas I think he's got both, and he's very unexposed for a horse of his age.
And finally, anything else catch your eye on the weekend that has just gone?
Not really, no. No, in short, there was an awful lot of racing on. I had to take both of my children to a four-year-old's birthday party on Saturday, so I ended up missing all the racing. And then I was in here yesterday, so you know what I think of that.
Yeah, excellent. There we go. Well, that gives us time to move on to talk about racing on Tuesday. We've got an evening jumps card at Stratford, Rory, and I believe both of your selections run there.
Yeah, it's not a great day's racing on the flat tomorrow. You know, the one thing about the good weather is that we tend to get small fields after a while, and they're not particularly appealing at Hamilton or Brighton. So Stratford it is.
more by process of elimination.
It kind of is that way, really, yeah. The 7 o'clock race is interesting, mainly because sometimes you see a race and there's a horse you like in it and you want to back it.
Yeah.
You know, it catches your eye. You've maybe made a note of it before. But sometimes you look at a race and the horse you know is going to be favourite is a horse you definitely want to be against. And that is one of those races where the chances are that Café Olé will be favourite. trained by Dan Skelton, in flying form. He was firing in winners at Uttoxeter. And what did he have? He had 4 winners yesterday? 5 winners?
Did he have 4 at Uttoxeter?
He had Not Now Seamus, Virgilio, Symphony of Angels, Fair Mountain, all winners, and a second and a third from those other 3 runners. And in fairness, he couldn't have done an awful lot better, quite frankly. But, you know, if you're talking about Dan Skelton and how good he is as trainer, it's about his strike rate with horses he picks up from other yards. And he has picked up Café Olé from another yard. And Café Olé has started favourite 7 times for Dan Skelton. Guess how many times he's won in those races?
One.
The one is the obvious answer. It's wrong. The answer is none.
Oh, right.
The only time he won, yeah, because there's a one on his card.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
He must have been favourite there. That was the one time that he wasn't fancied. And he somehow won that race at Bangor, having looked a most unlikely winner at one stage of the race. And you could mark him up for that, or you could say that maybe things sort of panned out to suit him. He was held up at the back of the field that day and produced the lead late on. Looked pretty impressive. But then back in a handicap hurdle on his next start, off a lower mark. I mean, it's a good bit of placing. If you can win over fences, you can then run over hurdles without carrying a penalty, yeah, and vice versa. So Café Olé was able to run over hurdles where he'd been showing decent form. And again, he ran moderately. He was 5th of 16 in a handicap at Southall. He's now been put up by the handicapper for his win, so he races of 109. You can take the view that, well, he's clearly much better over fences. My view is that, you know, he fell in that day at Bangor.
Mm.
He looked impressive. It wasn't a terribly competitive contest. And he's not a horse that you would trust implicitly. He travels well held up. He doesn't find as much off the bridle as often looks the case. And I think he's going to be short again because of the stable form, because of his record. And I want to take him on. And then the question is, who do I take him on with? I don't want to take him on with the Tom George horse, because the Tom George horses are running terribly at the moment. He did have a winner last week, but most of his horses running in handicaps are getting beaten by a long way. So although Born for War is interesting, the stable form puts me off. And I've ended up narrowing this down, rightly or wrongly, to a couple, Birch Hill and Ali Jacques. Birch Hill is a hard horse to get a handle on, and that he's capable of throwing in a poor race. And he left Nicky Henderson reasonably cheaply, and Sophie Leach picked him up. But he was really impressive when winning over hurdles at Huntingdon in February. And he ran well when second in his chase debut at Cartmel. My gut feeling is you can't absolutely trust him. And I think he's going to be a shorter price than Ali Jacques. And I'm going to back Ali Jacques on the basis that he's built for this. He's been brought along very gradually in bumpers and over hurdles for Emma Lavelle, and she has historically a very good record when moving horses from hurdles into handicap chases. And Ali Jacques is fairly handicapped without being thrown in off a mark of 115. He was a runner-up at Uttoxeter over hurdles in November, which got him his mark. His previous form would have got him a much lower one. He struggled a little bit since then, but his last 2 runs are solid. He handled good ground well when 4th at Foss last time out. I think the chances are that the time to catch him over fences is his first time out. That's often the way with Emma Lavelle's horses, particularly in sort of spring to autumn. That's when our horses do best. So it's kind of a process of elimination there, but I think you get a decent price about Ali Jacques, and he'll do the job.
Process of elimination to find the meeting the tipping is taking place at, and process of elimination to find the horse, Ali Jacques, and that's 7 o'clock at Stratford, that handicap chase. And half an hour later, all your other selection runs.
Yes, and again, it's not a process of elimination this time, but there are one or two that I think will be underpriced, and a horse who's always backable and is very reliable as Pearl's Legend. He's an 11-year-old now, but he gets on well with Nico de Boinville. He appreciated the return of headgear when winning at Huntingdon in May, and he's run 2 solid races to be placed since. He just got a little bit far back at Aintree last time out, and I'd expect to see him ridden more prominently in this race. He's a bull jumper on the whole, a big, strong horse, you know, who wears his heart on his sleeve. He's a very, very likeable character. He spent a long time being a bit too high on the weights. He's now on a more realistic mark of 129. And there's nothing in this race that is thrown in. I mean, the danger with Pearl's Legend is in a competitive two-man handicap chase, there's always something unexposed that ends up with 7 or 8 pounds in hand, and Pearl's Legend will always struggle with that kind of horse because we know exactly how good he is, and he always gives the handicapper enough to clobber with. So what he needs is a race where the other horses are also exposed or regressive or a little bit half-hearted, because he's not. And I think this is that kind of race. It's very tightly handicapped. You can give a chance to everything in the field on the pick of their form, but nothing is thrown in, and therefore the usual solid run from Pearl's Legend could well be good enough to win.
Pearl's Legend then for Rory in the 7:30 at Stratford. It's live on Racing Radio along with the rest of Tuesday's racing. And we'll be back tomorrow on the podcast. John O'Connell joins me then to look at Wednesday's racing. Rory, thanks for being with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.